Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
All right, two teams remain in the NFC, the NFC Conference game, along with the AFC Conference game this weekend. We don't care as much about the AFC right now, right? I mean, it's the game that I personally am really looking forward to, a battle between Joe Burrow and Patrick Mahomes. We'll be talking about it on Monday, Bump. But the game we all have an eye on, too, for Seahawks purposes, is the NFC battle between the Philadelphia Eagles and the San Francisco 49ers. The 1 and 2 seed face each other in a game that I think most people could have predicted, right? I mean, the two best teams all year long. It was a slow start for San Francisco, but then they went on a streak of 10 regular season wins before, obviously, now up to 12 heading into the conference title game. And the Eagles were the final undefeated team in the NFL. The Eagles and San Francisco are both top five in total offense for 2022. The San Francisco and Philadelphia are both top five in total defense in 2022. I mean, they are powerhouses. So, Bump, what we're doing isn't necessarily looking at these two teams, but looking at who is hot on their trail. Yes. The throne in the NFC right now. A battle between two teams, but a third, maybe a fourth, could be joining soon. So let's talk about the teams, Bump, that are chasing the Eagles and the 49ers for NFC supremacy. Why don't you get us started with one of your picks?
No particular order, right? We're not ranking. We're just saying these are the teams who are chasing these guys. The Philadelphia Eagles and the Niners are, look, we're in a class of our own. We're playing for the ship this weekend. You guys sit back and watch. And I got to start with a team who disappoints half of America every single year.
Of course.
It's the Dallas Cowboys.
Of course.
There's talent over there. There's no denying what they have. Dak Prescott, right? He had some turnover issues this year. You got CeeDee Lamb. You had a 1-2 punch in Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott. Pollard is now a free agent. We'll see what happens there. Defensively, you got some guys. You got Van Der Esch. You have DeMarcus Lawrence. Every year on paper, you're looking at this team and you're saying, okay, they got a chance. They got to get into the playoffs. Things have to go right. But it's all about quarterback play. What, 7 years now, Dak has been the leader for these Dallas Cowboys. And there's something about when it comes down to the clutch, he just ain't got it. But every year, right, teams and free agents are attracted to the Dallas Cowboys. All right, they want to be a part of America's team, all the hype, primetime football every single week. So with that, Jerry has done a good job just branding this team. Everyone knows. I mean, I could go to Europe right now and they know who the Dallas Cowboys are. That's just what it is. So every year, if they're going to be in the mix, their roster is going to look good. I'm not saying they're on the heels of the Niners in Philly, but they're definitely in the mix.
Yeah. Dak Prescott with 15 interceptions during the regular season, less than ideal, but I think he can still be their guy. I think the problem that the Dallas Cowboys are facing, if they do want to return, is that they got to figure out some key free agents offensively. Now, one of those isn't Dak, nor is it, like Zeke or anyone major. But you were the fourth offense in terms of points per game with 27.5 points per game. Only three offenses scored more than the Dallas Cowboys, Kansas City, Buffalo, and Philadelphia. Three teams I think we'd all agree are pretty good. But the Dallas Cowboys, if they want to take that throne, are going to have to look at figuring out what to do with Tony Pollard, who's now coming off of surgery to repair a broken fibula. He's set to be an unrestricted free agent. Also, key contributor here, Dalton Schultz, yep, who should have stayed in bounds. We talked about that specific play. But Dalton Schultz, a key contributor there at tight end, is also an unrestricted free agent, and he may cost a pretty penny to be able to bring back. Now, they've got some other guys, left tackle Jason Peters, Anthony Barr, Leighton Van Der Esch, just like, you know, Dante Fowler Jr. Who knows if they bring, you know, any one of these individual guys back. But I do think that figuring out how to keep Pollard and ideally how to keep Schultz or find a replacement specifically at tight end is going to be key to Dallas's road back, not only to the divisional round, but ideally for them. I don't know about ideally for fans who hate Jerry Jones, but ideally for them to find a way to get to the conference title. Okay, let's see. I wanted to look at another team here. Going a little closer to home. Bump. Let's already get to it. Let's waste no more time. How about the Seattle Seahawks? I think there are a lot of people that would disagree with this pick outside of Seattle. Me, you, Curtis, everyone listening is like, yeah, the Seahawks could be there if they wanted to, right? Like, we know that this has been a team that has been a championship team. They have had a winning culture. Why couldn't they get back there? This is where I kind of ran into an interesting theoretical. I'll tell you the answer I got to first, and then I'll tell you the question, which sounds weird. But I decided that the Seahawks belong in this conversation of teams that could be hot on the trail of the Eagles and 49ers. That's the conclusion I got to. What I struggle with is I almost included Detroit, and then I thought, well, they got to fix their defense, and I don't feel confident with Jared Goff. Is that not a conversation people could be having about the Seahawks right now?
Sounds familiar.
That they aren't confident about the quarterback situation and that they're, you know, a couple pieces away on defense of being really competitive. So how did I get from thinking that about the Detroit Lions and keeping them out of my list while allowing the Seahawks to advance? Am I biased or can the Seahawks potentially get there within a year?
Both. You're biased and they can get there within a year.
Fair.
I think that they need to hit on this draft. And the thing about this draft is we won't really know if they hit until like a few weeks in. You know, we'll have an idea during preseason who's playing well, but then the pool is cut dang near in half and then the competition goes up a bit. So they got to hit in this draft and they better not draft a quarterback at number 5 from Kentucky. That's step number 1.
I want it to happen now. I don't think you understand. The second that it became clear how upset you were about it, the more I wanted it to happen.
But they have Pro Bowlers, right? They have Tariq. I mean, you got Diggs over there. You got, I'm going to mention the kicker, Dave Wyman. Don't beat me up. Jason Myers over there.
Recently extended.
Depends on what you see what you do with Geno Smith. You have good receivers. They're closer than what I think people realize they are. But some things need to happen. Free agents, draft, need to have another good offseason. Another good one.
All right. We got some other teams here in the NFC. So let's get to our next one. Let's see. Bump, what do you have? Teams,
man,
hot on the trail.
The
very
most
Game of Thrones themed here.
Most fraudulent team in all of football, honestly.
Stop. Okay.
But you can't disrespect what they did.
God, I know where you're going.
It's the Vikings of Minnesota.
Vikings, yeah.
I mean, the most fraudulent team in the NFL.
Truly.
But they have Justin Jefferson. They have Dalvin Cook. They have Kirk Cousins, who's going to keep them in the mix. It's all about winning the ball games. But we're not talking about teams who we think are for sure things. We're talking about teams that are, okay, if next year the Niners and Philly come back and they're a good football team, they do what they do, you have to get through these teams, right? And there's only so many teams that you have to get through. And the Minnesota Vikings are one of them, even though they had one of the most disappointing playoff losses I've seen in a very long time to the New York Football Giants. But there's talent on the roster. That's the thing that kills me right there. So now I just gotta look at culture. Like, what's the culture like over there when you walk into the building with the Minnesota Vikings? But can't deny I'm fraudulent, but they won a lot of games this year.
Hey, we gave Dak Prescott a hard time for 15 interceptions. How about 14 interceptions for Kirk Cousins? Though I don't think anyone would say Kirk Cousins is strictly the reason the Minnesota Vikings were able to win the North. No. I think we say that would be MVP finalist Justin Jefferson. He is there. He's under contract. Minnesota, luckily for them, if you're looking at catching up in 2023, don't have like major offensive weapons that are hitting free agency. They're still going to have Jefferson. Obviously, Cousins is still going to be there. They're going to have to look at what to do with the interior of their offensive line. Center Garrett Bradbury is hitting free agency. They got two defensive starters, Patrick Peterson and Dalvin Tomlinson, hitting free agency. But otherwise, they just need to worry about, like, hey, let's get a backup quarterback and stock up on the defense a little bit. And they could make another run here. You're right. At the throne in the NFC. This is a team that is one of four teams that entered the playoffs with a negative point differential. And before anyone wants to critique the Seahawks were not one of those teams. So, yeah, Minnesota Vikings fans all year long were like, how dare you not believe in this team? You know, they're the number three seed. They won the NFC North. What more do you want? And what people wanted was to see this team win it dominantly, to not win by one score games, to not constantly be like winning by the skin of their teeth.
To not lose to Daniel Jones. Come on now.
And so I agree with you. I think they are going to be, if we're being honest, one of the teams pushing the Eagles, pushing the 49ers. I have less confidence that it will actually be them getting there to sit on the, I guess, Iron Throne in this case. But I love the picks so far. Feel most strongly about Dallas. but also think that Seattle and Minnesota do deserve to be in that conversation. It sounds like we're going through every NFC team, but we are not. Let's get to – do you have one more? Because I have one. I can go quickly, though.
Yeah, go ahead. What you got?
Okay. Let me get to my next NFC team here. This one is a little weird. It's a wild card. Hear me out. The Rams.
It's not weird at all.
The Rams, I understand, lost more games following a Super Bowl win than had any other Super Bowl winner in the history of the NFL. That includes the Denver Broncos, who had a horrific season after winning a Super Bowl several years back. In the 94? Who cares? But they were also banged up. I don't think the issue this year for the Rams, and I'm curious to hear your take on this, Bump, was that suddenly all their best players became hurt. Their issue was that they didn't have a run game to start the season, lost out on some wide receivers so that Matthew Stafford was only ever targeting Cooper Kupp. Then they lost Cooper Kupp. Aaron Donald was hurt following, I want to say, like week 11, missed a lot of time. Stafford got hurt. I mean, by the end of the year, they had lost most of their offensive line, their top receiver, their top defensive player, and their quarterback. They're keeping their head coach. Some of the staff is moving on, but some of the staff is still staying. I believe in Sean McVay. I still think Stafford's got it. And most importantly, I believe in Aaron Donald and Cooper Kupp, who are going to be here. They have some free agent stuff to figure out, but I think the Rams deserve to be in this conversation because they aren't losing major talent.
No, you have your faces of the team in place. Matthew Stafford will be back. Cooper Kupp will be back. Aaron Donald will be back. Jalen Ramsey will be back.
Yeah.
Ernest on defense doesn't get enough love. I believe he will be back as well. You also have Leonard Floyd. Sometimes, and then you have McVay. I don't know if I mentioned him or not.
Yeah.
But sometimes things just happen in a season, and they start to snowball, and teams start to lose belief. Could you imagine being on that Rams team and seeing Matthew Stafford go out, Cooper Kupp go out, Aaron Donald go out?
Everyone.
You're like, man, do we really have a chance to win now? If I'm a backup, I'm thinking, yes, I'm going to get more playing time. I'm going to get more time to get some film out there. But you need your dogs on the field, and I think that's what happened right there. And then you got the whispers of Sean McVay. Is he coming back? Is he going to the booth? What's going to happen there? And Sean McVay said, look, any coach, you guys can go out and interview for a job if you want to. I'm not going to stop you. So even Sean McVay is thinking, okay, let's revamp this thing. I think Sean McVay is going to have to do the best coaching job he's ever done going into this season if he were to come back, because of all the coaches that he's losing and then all the adversity that they face. This is when a culture is really tested. We thought of the Rams as one of the best football teams in the league for years now. There's a bump in the road. Let's see how they respond. But no, I don't think you're crazy for thinking that these guys will be one of the teams to push.
Well, and there were questions about whether or not Matthew Stafford would be able to come back in the first place, whether he'd hit retirement or his injury would force him into retirement. But I do want to say that the Rams were expected to pick up his salary for a 2023 option bonus and his 2024 salary. So the Rams at least seem like they're counting on Matthew Stafford being back. Because of that, I'm looking at them as being potentially in there. Now, Bump, I got four down territory for you, so you're going to get four X's and O's questions. Do you want to get to one more of your teams?
Yeah, I got one more.
Okay, let's do it.
It got to be the Packers. If Aaron Rodgers is there, you got to respect the Packers to see what they do. He's also been saying as of late, he is up for restructuring his contract. Guess how much he's getting paid, folks? $50 million. $50 million a year. Yeah, $50 million. You better restructure that thing if you want some help. $30 million a year, 13%, not so much. You should be okay. But $50 million a year, you want some help. You got to restructure that. As much as I don't like his personality, you got to respect the game. But his job is for Aaron Rodgers is he has to be able to elevate the guys around him. You have two good running backs and Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. All right, you probably need another running back. Receiver. Alan Lazard has been okay.
Yeah.
You got a future there with Christian Watson. That defense needs to be shored up. But if Aaron Rodgers is willing to restructure, like he said on McAfee, because that's the only place he talks about things, it's a Pat McAfee show, then I think these guys have a chance if Aaron were to come back.
Couple key free agent pass catchers. That's including tight ends they could target as well if they do get some extra money there. This hour of Bump and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. That was Who's Chasing the NFC Throne. Obviously, the game between these top two teams happening this weekend. Let's get to four down territory.
This is four down territory. Going inside the game. What former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, let's get to the playoffs, Bump. What's something three of the four remaining teams in the playoffs have in common?
They have at least six Pro Bowlers on that roster.
Oh, wow.
And got the Eagles. You have a QB, a running back, a guard, a center, a linebacker, and a linebacker. Chiefs, you got a tackle, a center, a D-tackle, a tight end, a QB, offensive guard. Frisco, you got a tackle, a tight end, a fullback, a linebacker, a safety, and a DN. The Bengals have three. The Bengals are like the poor man group of this.
That's why I think they're likable.
Yeah, exactly, right? Hard nose.
Yeah.
Cincinnati. I've never been in Cincinnati. I've been a lot of places. I've never been. You know what? Let's go to Cincinnati, babe.
Let's go.
Take a trip to Cincinnati.
Yeah, take the fam to Cincinnati, and I'll tag along with you guys.
Skyline Chili?
Yeah. You guys can go on couples trip. You can bring Brenna. You'll bring Jen. And I'll just tag along as the fifth wheel. Like, let's go to Cincinnati.
No, we'll do with you. We'll go out. You take care of the kids for
what?
A couple hours.
No.
Let us go chill for a little bit.
That's so rude.
We'll pay you. We'll pay you good. Don't worry
okay,
about it.
Okay, that's fine. I'll allow it.
But more specifically, three of those teams have Pro Bowlers on the offensive line and the defensive line. All right. So when I hear Mel Kiper talk about a number five pick, a QB out of Kentucky, I'm like, no. Let's look at what these teams are doing who are competing for a championship this week. They got Pro Bowlers across the board, but specifically on the offensive line and the defensive line. You might have some youngsters in the making with the tackles that you have with the Seattle Seahawks. All right. Then I went back and I go, man, who have been the Seahawks offensive line Pro Bowlers? You got Dwayne Brown in 2021. You got Walter Jones in 08, Steve Hutchinson in 05, Unger in 13, and Russell Okung in 12. Almost all of those guys played meaningful football games in the playoffs. Not a lot of guys on this offensive line for the Seahawks who have made the Pro Bowl.
No.
That's where they need to make a shift. You might have it already, but more importantly, the defensive line.
Oh, that's killer. Second down. All right, the AP MVP finalists have been released. What about this list makes you happy? I have a guess.
Let's go. It's about time one of the most athletic positions in all the land gets some respect. The wide receivers, baby.
I knew it.
Come on now.
Would be it. The second I saw Justin Jefferson's name, I thought Bump is so happy today.
My guy is the best route runner in the game. He needs to be considered as one of the best in the game. Top three for sure. And the thing about Justin Jefferson is, I've said this before, everything has to go right for him to get the football. The center has to snap the ball. The O-line has to protect. Quarterback has to go through his reads. He has to deliver a serviceable football. And then Justin Jefferson comes down with it. I'm just happy. He's not going to win this thing. It's not going to happen. This is a quarterback award. But I just appreciate the Associated Press giving my guy some love, because he's a special, special type of receiver. He got kids all across the land doing the gritty. If you don't know what it is, Google it. It's a dance these kids do after they score a touchdown. Or ask your kids.
Your kids will know.
Hit the Google engine and see what happens there.
Yeah, but go to Ask Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves. Wow, throwback right there.
Yeah.
Is that still around, Ask Jeeves?
I don't know. I'll ask Jeeves.
But no, I'm just happy that a receiver's in the mix, man. He's not going to win that thing. Pat Mahomes is probably going to win it. I'm happy to see Joe Burrow in the mix as well.
Yep.
But no, whenever I see a receiver up for the Heisman or the MVP, you are going to hear about it from your boy. I
completely agree. I'm also weirdly happy to see Jalen Hurts in there.
Yeah, me too.
I think that he got overlooked a little bit because of his ability to be really mobile and because he was on a well-balanced team. And people were like, well, is it Jalen Hurts or is it the team? It's Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is incredibly talented. Third down. The Chiefs are underdogs for the first time in the Patrick Mahomes era. Will this help or hurt them?
I saw this and I start to play the mental game. I'm thinking, all right, man, what are the Chiefs thinking? You know, do they see this and they see it as disrespect? Like, we're the best team in all the land. But I think they're underdogs for a good reason. Pat Mahomes is hurt. If he were not hurt, then it'd be a different deal. So now I'm going to flip it and say, these guys are looking at that and saying, man, number 15 walking around in a boot. Number 15 has some crutches on right now. I think it's messing with them, honestly. Honestly, I think it's not going to help them. It's going to hurt them because it makes them mortal. They realize that things are different for them this time. They realize that they cannot depend on number 15 to roll outside to the right, throw it across his body, make a couple guys miss, and do the magical things that we're used to seeing. You're going to have to play some traditional-type football. My neighbor across the street, loved the dude. Didn't even realize he was a big Chiefs fan until yesterday. I'm taking the trash out. He goes, hey, what about those Chiefs? Had no idea he was a Chiefs fan. I'm like, man, they're done. I go, hey, Pat Mahomes' ankle. He goes, no, they're good. He's fine. I go, dang, you are a Chiefs fan. I go, that's what you guys are thinking. That's a high ankle sprain, man. I've had three or four of those.
Yeah.
You don't just come back and you're 100%. But the belief is there. But I think this makes them mortal. And I think it's going to hurt them more than help them.
Fourth down. Yesterday during Four Down Territory, we talked about which of the remaining playoff coaches is probably the best coach of the bunch, and you ended with Andy Reid. Today's Fourth Down, who got snubbed for Coach of the Year finalist?
You know what? I'm going to big up John Boyle for this argument because he's the one that got me fired up about it. John Boyle, he's a writer for the Seattle Seahawks. Go ahead and check him out. The finalists are Nick Sirianni, for sure. Kyle Shanahan, for sure.
Yeah.
Brian Daboll, I get it.
Okay.
Sean McDermott, okay. Doug Peterson, all right. Where's Pete Carroll? Now,
yeah.
Pete Carroll gets snubbed. This is what he does. And people are going to tell me, they're going to hate and say he hadn't done anything. I'm just going to read what John Boyle said on his tweet. And it really got me going. And really, this snub in a vacuum wouldn't bug me that much. But it's the moving target over the course of his career that gets me. Pete Carroll has overachieved during a complete rebuild after a 5-win season in 2010. One with an ascending young team after missing the playoffs in 2012. And now his team has drastically exceeded expectations with an all-pro free roster, according to voters, and still nothing? Strange. Just give the man some recognition. He ain't got to win this thing. But stop ignoring what Pete Carroll's done over here. For all the things you can say about him, all the moves that he's made, him throwing his challenge flags at the wrong time, he never gets them. I understand that.
It always
makes
me laugh.
The fact that he has kept this team competitive this year when no one thought they were going to do that, he's pretty much Doug Peterson.
Yep.
That's what people are saying about the Jacksonville Jaguars. They didn't expect much from them, yet they get into the playoffs, and they make a run at it. So no disrespect to any of those coaches who are on the list. I think they're all worthy. I'm just saying, man, give my boy Pete some flowers.
No, I completely agree. What you're saying is if you're going to make the award who does the most with the least, then Pete Carroll should have been nominated. If you're going to make the award, well, who gets to a Super Bowl, then Pete Carroll should have been nominated, right? Like, it's
right.
That there are any excuse you can make for how the award should be judged, Pete Carroll has been able to do that. It's also insane. Saying to me that neither he nor John Schneider have ever been winners of these awards for Coach of the Year or Executive of the Year, despite keeping this team so competitive for more than a decade. Actually, I was going to say the better part of a decade, but absolutely insane. Coming up in the timeline, LeBron continues his domination, a Sonics legend says, when he thinks the NBA will return to Seattle. And NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman makes a joke without meaning to. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Bump and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. We are going to get started in the NHL, where I mentioned that NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman made a joke without meaning to. Here's what happened. Gary Bettman talked about teams in the NHL not tanking. Now, any commissioner is going to say this, but take a listen.
Are you at all concerned with the growing number of teams tanking?
Nobody tanks because we have a weighted lottery, and you're not going to lose games to increase your odds by a couple of percentage points. That's silly. And frankly, suggesting tanking, I believe, is inconsistent with the professionalism that our players and our coaches have. Nobody tanks. Our players and our coaches do their best to win. And again, just because you may finish with the worst record in the league, you've got something like a 75% chance that you're not going to get the first pick.
Chicago would beg to differ. In fact, those little percentage points that can make the difference in a lottery pick when one of the best talents ever is potentially available at number one with Bedard. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say that teams are fine with tanking to be able to increase their chance of getting that number one pick by even a couple percentage points.
In every professional league across the world.
Thank you.
There is tanking.
What?
There's tanking.
What?
He should have came out and been like, you know what, if we find out some of these guys are tanking, that we're going
to
be authoritative with this thing. We're
going to
go after them. That's what you should have said. Just sit there and sit in front of people and be like, no, our team's not our league. Maybe the NBA, maybe the NFL, but not our league. No, man, you are not higher than that. It happens all the time, man. So that's silly. He said tanking is silly. That's silly. Weighted lottery. There's numbers. There's percentages.
I know. There's
a clear advantage for tanking in that situation.
Also, there are teams that are in that middle ground where rather than missing the playoffs by a couple points, would much rather be able to get potentially a top five pick in the lottery.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
if you sense that you're going to be just slightly below mediocre or a mediocre team that's going to be kind of competitive for a minute or for stretches of time but not really get there, you would rather just be bad and have a chance to make your team better. So, yeah, there are decisions, some business decisions that teams make. Do I think players are out there trying to lose? No.
No.
Do I think organizations are very tempted to when they're in those places? try to get the top pick? Yes.
I guarantee you there are meetings when all the executives sit around and say, what is this team? What are our chances of really winning? And then you get your data guys, throw the numbers out there and say, you know, we're X amount of players away. This is what we're going to do. All right, we're going to set up lineups that that don't give us the best chance to win. They don't go out and say, we're going to lose. We're going to say, look, man, make it happen. That's why Lovie Smith got fired, because he wasn't with the tanking. You want someone who doesn't tank? Lovie Smith with the Texans, man. He wasn't about that business, and guess what? He got fired.
Also, the Blackhawks in Arizona are right now tanking.
Yes.
In front of your face.
Well, and Gary Bettman's quote flies in the face of something that Ron Francis, GM of the Kraken, told us this show a couple weeks ago, where he's like, look, teams are on the deadline. They're probably going to be making moves because of Bedard.
You know, a lot of kicking tires, a lot of things haven't happened. It'll be interesting to see now with this tournament and the success that Mr. Bedard had in it, whether that speeds up some teams trying to move players.
Now, Francis didn't directly say that teams were tanking, but he heavily implied it by giving us that quote.
Yeah, it's I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with tanking when you just don't have the pieces to compete. There is something annoying about a commissioner who, like, I get why he's saying it, but kind of insulting the intelligence of sports fans everywhere. It's kind of like when Rob Manfred during the MLB lockouts, or the lockout. God, what was he doing that was driving people crazy? I think he was just basically doing, like, straight propaganda for the league, and people were really upset at the way he was framing things. I'll have to get back to this.
Yeah, he thought that by making a draft
stupid.
Lottery for the MLB draft, it would curtail teams from tanking.
Yeah, I don't even know. Moving on, let's talk NBA for our next two stories here. After scoring 46 points against the Clippers last night, LeBron James has now scored at least 40 points in a game against every team in the NBA.
Good for LeBron. I'm watching that game last night, and I was disappointed, honestly. If you're streaming right now.
Because it came in a loss.
You see behind me, see I got my Lakers, my LA up there.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys knew that Bump was a Lakers fan.
I'm a Lakers fan. And I'm watching this game, and the crowd is getting hyped. Like, LeBron's going off. The crowd is getting hyped. We're down by 12, guys. There's 3 minutes left in this game. Like, what are we cheering for? Are we cheering for, like, the individual accolade?
Yes.
Or are we cheering for the team right now? That's what bugs me. I appreciate LeBron and his greatness. I'm not a LeBron type of guy. I'm not like a LeBron fan, but I appreciate and understand where he is in history. What bothered me is that we're cheering for the wrong stuff, man. LA fans, Laker fans, I was highly disappointed. Good for LeBron scoring 40 against every team. You play for 100 years. You probably should be able to do that. And the things that he's doing at 38 is crazy. I'm 37 and I got asked to play in a flag football league. I said no, because I don't want to tear my knees up. All right. So big ups to LeBron.
Question for you guys before I go on to our next story here. What is one of the best performances you can remember that came in a loss? I've got a suggestion. It's not the best ever, but Gabe Davis for the Bills, 4 touchdowns.
In that same game, Josh Allen. I think Josh Allen had a perfect passer rating that game, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and it still wasn't enough. 4 touchdowns by an individual receiver in a loss is just killer.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah.
Can't think of one. Give me a break.
Yeah,
I'll think of one.
Yeah, come back to it. Let's get to NBA, though. We're not going to move away from the league. All right. Also in NBA news, this one about Seattle, in an interview with TMZ Sports, which I know you're hearing TMZ Sports, but let me tell you what, TMZ, for better or worse, they get that info.
They do.
TMZ Sports Sonics legend Gary Payton says that he expects the NBA to return to Seattle within the next 2 years. Take a listen.
Yeah, I think it's going to happen. I think that us in Vegas should be a good starting point for what the NBA wants to do. I think in the next couple of years, 3 years, by 2025, I think they should be thinking about announcing teams are going to come. I really hope that they're gonna add 2 teams and be like that. I think that it's time for a change. And I think the person who changes that is Adam Silver, who I've been telling us a long time is probably the greatest commissioner right now out there doing the things that he does for the sport.
Now, is that a fact or a hunch? Now, I've been hearing this rumor as well for the last, year, I want to say. And it's only natural that Vegas and Seattle are the teams that you expand to. You got the Las Vegas Raiders over there in Seattle. First off, I want to say, Raiders, I'm kind of mad at y'all because I try to get hotel rooms in Vegas during football season. And the same room that cost me $200 is now $700, thanks to the Vegas Raiders. But it's only natural. And Seattle is a basketball town, man. Basketball city. I was talking to my son the other day, and we're watching TNT, and Jamal Crawford is there. I'm like, yeah, he's a Seattle guy. And I start naming all these Seattle basketball players, and my son is like, how come they don't have a team? I go, comes down to the money, comes down to the facilities. Some went down in 08. You know what? It's too long. We don't have enough time. It's almost bedtime, but just know that the fans are extremely mad at Starbucks. And it sounds like this team should be coming back, though. They kept the rights to the Sonics, thank goodness. So they should be back, though.
There was like a full 24 hours when I debated somewhat recently in my adulthood not getting Starbucks anymore because someone shamed me for it, like jokingly shamed me for it. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Maybe I shouldn't. And then I just decided to not care. It's just there are other people to be mad at. Yeah, Howard Schultz, not great. But look, what are you going to do? It's on every corner. Can't say no. God, act like I got to have like ethics here. All right. If you miss any part of the show, make sure you're subscribed to the Bump and Stacey podcast. The latest Seattle sports news is available right on your phone every single weekday. That's wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or Apple. Please rate and review if you do subscribe, most especially if you are using Apple Podcasts with how many stars, Bump?
Five of them things.
Five stars only. Coming up next, Scott Service was on the Hot Stove Show. We'll tell you what the skip says he learned last season and what the goal is in 2023.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Scott Service was on the Hot Stove Show last night. We'll tell you what you missed if you weren't able to tune in. The skipper talked about some of the biggest things he learned from last season, the goal for 2023, and also who he's most excited to see in spring training. So let's get to it. The biggest thing that Scott Service says he learned last year.
I think the biggest thing is just like the value of really listening to players and the people around me. And, you know, I have so much trust and confidence in our coaching staff and, you know, what they bring to the mix and kind of the group of our staff put together. We really, you know, we bring different levels of experience, different levels of you know, what we do and being at the top of our game and what we do.
Bump, how important is it for those relationships, like with a head coach or manager being there and with a front office being there and with the same players? How important is that consistency when it comes to trying to actually get to a World Series, to a Super Bowl, to a Stanley Cup final, whatever it is?
It's extremely important. You want to be able, especially in sports, you got to deal with people who you're like-minded, right? Like-minded, but also different in a way that you can challenge each other in a way that's productive and respectful. And that's what I hear. I hear Service saying, look, you know, I trust these guys around me. They challenge me. I challenge them. We can have difficult conversations without getting extremely emotional and then coming to work the next day and not liking each other. Mm-hmm. Because you have to have those conversations. You're building a team. You might see a player one way and then the skip might see it a different way. You know, you might want to go one direction and skip might want to go the other direction. So somewhere you have to meet in the middle. I think that's extremely important for any working relationship, but especially when it comes to evaluating talent and trying to figure out how to take the next step with a 90-win team.
All right. Service also talked about his goal for 2023.
Each team takes on its own identity. So as far as the expectations and whatnot, obviously the expectation, you know, the goal is to win the division. And it ain't going to be easy. Certainly the Astros won it all last year, and then they've got a really good club again. But that's the goal. Win the division, get in the playoffs, and see where it goes from there.
Now, I certainly wish the Mariners were playing in the AL Central, Bump. But unfortunately for all of us, they're in the AL West with last year's World Series winner and one of the most dominant teams in baseball. Have they closed the gap?
Yeah, a little bit. Not enough for me to feel like they're going to contend for the division, but have they made moves? Yeah, they've made moves. You got another arm, second base. You got another outfielder. You add another bat, and AJ. Not the bat that you're looking for, but he's a lefty. He's, what, 33, 34 years old, a veteran. And we've seen veterans do well in this organization because there's some young talent around, and maybe you need that leadership. Santana's no longer here, so you need guys like AJ to come in. They've gotten better, but not good enough to where I'm thinking, Houston, y'all better watch out.
As far as who he is most excited to see in spring training, I wanted to start with who we are most excited to see in spring training so that we could talk about a couple players here. Bump, I'm obviously most excited to see Julio, but I have all the faith in the world that Julio will be great in 2023. So I think what I'm looking at is, you know, a guy like Ty France, who we know can be really good, but who had a slump at times, maybe due to injury last year. I think I'm going to be keeping an eye on him. And you know, I feel great about the pitching staff, but maybe keeping an eye on Marco and Flexen, see if there's a last second trade there into spring training. But who are you keeping an eye on, or who are you excited to see in spring training?
I want to see Jared Kelnick, man.
Of course.
I'm still waiting. I'm still hoping. Here's the thing about me, man. I always hope for the best when it comes to athletes, especially when they show you glimpses like, all right, it's in him. But how do we sustain this with JK? And I've learned to accept him as well for his personality, because you look at this Mariners team and there are a lot of outgoing guys who are always smiling and having fun. That's just not him. So I'm like, all right, well, now that I accept him for who he is, I've seen what he can do at times at the plate and in the outfield. Can he put it together? Because I was one of the guys who were ready to give up on him. Then I realized he's only, 22, 23 years old? He's still a young man. And in baseball, that's extremely young. In football, you're thinking, okay, this 23-year-old can carry my football team to the promised land. It's just different in baseball. So I'm not giving up on the kid yet, man. I think he has it in him. But I think it comes back to what Service was talking about. He trusts the guys around him, his coaches around him, the execs, like they have to find a way to bring it out of this guy quickly.
All right, so who is Scott Service most excited to see?
J.P. Crawford has done a lot of work this offseason in the weight room and his strength and conditioning training and what he's doing there. So, you know, anxious to see how that looks as we get going with spring training. I think, you know, you're always looking forward to seeing some of the younger players, you know, and you know, I don't think anybody's worked as hard as Jared Kelnick and Taylor Trammell have this offseason, trying to make some adjustments in their swing to allow them to be more consistent. So definitely anxious to see those guys, see how Tom Murphy's progressing.
All right, so yes, he's interested in the young guys like Jared Kelnick, like Taylor Trammell, to see how guys who were injured like Tom Murphy are progressing. But where'd he start bump? J.P. Crawford, supposed to be and is a leader on this team who had kind of a step back last season.
He did have a step back, and he should be interested because that's the player that I feel like they endorsed the most over the past couple of years. And for good reason, right? Had a Gold Glove year, fell off a little bit. But yeah, I'm interested to see what he looks like too, because they passed up on a lot of talent at that shortstop spot because they believe in J.P. Crawford. So I hope it works out for the team, and I hope it works out for J.P. as well, because you see the way that he is with his team. He's the clear leader of this ball club. He's going to have to step it up from last year, man. Last year just wasn't enough, and he knows that. That's the thing about athletes. People don't realize. You think J.P. walked away from that season being like, yep,
I
got her
great.
Done. Good to go. No, you think he didn't hear all the whispers about trying to get another shortstop in here? For sure he did. So I want to see how he responds to that. That's one of the great things I love, again, about watching athletes. How do you respond when you don't have the year that you thought you're going to have? You have the endorsement of the club, but they could have went a certain direction but decided not to. How are you going to repay them? What's your performance going to look like?
I'm sure plenty of other people saw this. I specifically remembered if you were seated anywhere near the dugout during any of those late games where JP was just in a slump and really having a hard time, is he was visibly frustrated. Like, you know, throwing the glove, not like in a bad sport kind of way, but in a way where he was just clearly upset with his own lack of production and knowing that his team needed him, because this is when they were in the midst of a playoff run and it looked like they were potentially slipping out of it. So if you're him, you're probably thinking like, God, if I was better, where would we be, right? And especially if you're a leader on this team. You're right. He knows. This is not lost on him that he needs to be an amazing shortstop defensively and amazing at the plate for this team, at least better than he was last year. All right, let's get to one final cut here. This one is interesting. Scott Service being asked, you know, about the changes that this team has made in the offseason, the potential for a midseason trade. Take a listen.
The offseason is really the time to make a major change. It's so hard to make physical adjustments throughout the course of the season as you're trying to go out there and compete at such a high level. So, you know, if you want a guy to, he's going to change something in his stance or his approach or his swing path, you know, that's constantly going on, our hitting coaches. And I'm getting updates there, and I'll check in with some guys. Other guys, you know, we adjust maybe some of the offseason workload as they come into spring training, you know, with the load that George Kirby put on last year, Logan Gilbert. You know, we want to be, I don't want those guys coming out firing 98 miles an hour on day one of spring training.
Saying the offseason is the time to make big changes, it's very hard to do midseason. Now, I know midseason they got Luis Castillo, which was the biggest and best move they made last year. But I think, like many people, I was kind of hoping we'd see a splashier move. Not that you needed it, but you just wanted this team to really make a splash in the postseason. I feel like of two minds, Bump. On the one hand, I'm disheartened to hear, like, hey, it's really hard to do those midseason trades. So I'm telling myself, like, don't, you know, hold out hope that they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, hey, spring training's a couple weeks away. This is the team. Get into it. That's, you know, right? I'm like, got these competing thoughts.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, too.
Yeah.
It's getting close to Peoria, and they're going to trot the guys out there, and it's time for them. This is where they really make their money in eval, right, in trying to put together the right pieces when it comes to this Mariners team. I've been in a wave of emotion when it comes to this team. I went from, like, being excited because they made the playoffs and the postseason starts, excited to see what they do, disappointed because guys have passed, optimistic because the guys they picked up, to where I'm like, okay, now let's just see what happens, because they've made it clear that nothing really is going to happen from here on out. And if something does happen during the season, it's not going to be a Castillo type splash like they made last year.
That's exactly right. All right, you guys, we're going to shift gears here, head back to the NFL. The Eagles were a wild card team and made it to a number one overall seed. So, what was the path they took, and which blueprint contention for all four of the teams remaining in the playoffs will be the easiest for the Seahawks to replicate? That's next.